Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report. I'm your host here in the middle, Chad Sherwood, joined by, we got David Griggs, we got Joby Fortson up top from Bracketeer.org, we got Rocco Miller, and back with us for the first time in a while, John Stalica. John, where the hell have you been?
I've been out to the Bay Area for about 6 weeks, but glad to be back home here in Cincinnati.
So he went to one basketball game and took 6 weeks to go there. What'd you do, walk or?
Yeah.
Welcome back, and we've got a lot to talk about, and
Before we get started, Chad, this was probably on Saturday the craziest day of the year, single day, and a lot of that was under the radar as much as it was on the radar with some of just crazy unexpected stuff that's been happening. We're gonna get into all that, but is it always like that and it just always seems like it's crazier than normal, or was Saturday exceptionally nuts?
I thought it was a great day. I think there's been great days, plenty of great days like that, but it was a great day.
It was a great day top to bottom. I think your under the radar component is very key, because the under the radar, a number of conferences don't have the depth that they normally do, and thus the under-the-radar schools have probably more attention and more ability, because they actually have an outside shot, of an at-large bid. So the focus is more.
Well, you had North Alabama winning their second game ever as a D1 program against someone that was on top. It was just a crazy day.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, you had North Texas losing to a team that was awful. It was just insane all the way up and down. You had North Carolina getting blown out by 20 before the game even tipped off against Louisville. I mean, it was – what a day. Anyway, why don't you start the show so we can get to all this?
Let's do it. Let's get right into it. Hopefully, we've got standings up on the screen, hopefully.
Yeah, can we start the show, Chad? Can we get started here,
Dave,
Chad?
We are underway here. We're going to start with a conference that had a crazy result, not only on Saturday, but another – crazy game tonight right before we started. Let's start by talking about the Duke Blue Devils, who got a miracle win on Saturday at Florida State, followed that up with an overtime loss tonight against Syracuse. They are number one in the coaches poll, at least for now, though. Joby, you're our ACC guy. Let me start by asking about them and the other number one team in the coaches poll, your Virginia Cavaliers.
Well, I think Zach Galifianakis was at the Florida State Duke game, because we saw Hangover City tonight with not just, and we'll get to the other side of that Florida State Duke game in a second and the results thereof. But Duke is still what we think they are, just so athletic, full of lottery picks. They showed something against Florida State. They showed me that they got defensive problems. I mean, they are not – someone's going to knock them off. They're not winning this thing. Someone's going to knock them off because they're going to hit their shots, like Syracuse did tonight, by the way.
Well, Syracuse hit their shots, but, I mean, obviously – I mean, the big factor that Rocco, Trey Jones getting knocked out of the game early in this game. I mean, Duke was all excited. Zion Williamson was playing, but that injury, I thought – killed them this tonight, and
Cameron was also
300.
That's a great point, Chad. I think Trey Jones was the whole reason they survived the Texas Tech scare. They were down early in the Texas Tech game in the Garden, and Trey Jones really carried them through a lot of tough moments when they played a defensive minded club like Texas Tech. A lot of people might have thought today's game would be similar, but Syracuse came up with an opposite game plan to just really attack Duke's softer defense, as you guys pointed out, and it worked to their advantage. Tyus Battle was able to do everything he wanted out there tonight. That had nothing to do with Jones being on the court or not. So great game plan by Syracuse. I'm a little surprised they were able to actually pull it off. I thought it would be somewhere along the way it would choke down the end, but they were able to get the big road victory that will hold up big time at the end of the year.
I think we're surprised because Syracuse's lead-in was actually the loss at home to Georgia Tech on Saturday, but Pascal Chukwu was another guy that had a big game for the Orange tonight. I think it was 10 points, 17 rebounds. So,
In the last 52 hours, Syracuse has lost at home badly. I mean, well, okay, it wasn't a blowout, but it was rather handily.
It was a blowout, David.
Yeah, it was a blowout. 73-50. Blowout at home to a team that is about 100 miles from the NIT, and then they beat the number one team in the country on the road. And what if it's not the best road win of the year or the best singular win of the year, it's going to be in the top two or three, probably number one. I don't think Virginia is going to lose at home. I don't think anybody else in the one line range is going to lose at home. What a turnaround for the Schizo Cuse Orange.
Yeah, look at that. Now, they've won at Duke and at Ohio State. They've lost at home to Old Dominion and Georgia Tech. I mean, this is an insane-looking profile at the moment. And, you know, I think we've got to point out that, you know, one of the reasons they did win today, though, was what I thought was, Dave, was an absolutely horrible call. At the end of the first half, Elijah Hughes hits a shot from three-quarters court.
Foot on the line.
His foot was on the three-point line, which makes it a two-point basket. You've got to be outside the three-point line, don't you?
Yeah, his foot was on the line.
And that thing almost at the scoreboard. That's how crazy it was.
Right. And if you pulled up the rule, it clearly states that his foot cannot be on the line.
There's a lot more to discuss in the ACC, though. Yes. A lot of other games. I don't even know where to start here. But actually, let's start with the other team that played tonight, though, Rocco. How about the Pitt Panthers? I know you had them under consideration in a bracket you did today, and they followed up with a home win over a very good Florida State team tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh's played great basketball, certainly the last three games. If you go back to the big win over Louisville in overtime last week, over the weekend, I'm not sure how closely you guys were following the game at NC State, but they led most of that game. It wasn't until a late NC State run that they end up losing by six. Easily satisfied anybody wagering on Pittsburgh that day. And then today come out and they keep it going, and they're just playing great ball the last, like I said, three times out at least. But throughout the year, they've shown improvement, and they continue to build. And by all means, they're right in the bubble picture from what I can tell. I think that's now – that puts them 3-3 in the quadrant one group, and then overall 4-4 in the first two groups. And the big loss is the home Niagara loss, but they'll have plenty of chances to overcome that.
There is one glaring anchor, and I know that they're going to have many opportunities to offset that. Their next true road win will be their first, and that is a problem. We've seen teams left out for that specific reason.
Exactly.
They have
Don't
to be
worry, somebody. David. They're at Syracuse this weekend, so they.
Oh yeah, they're at. So, I mean, they should get that one. Who's next? Because, well, like before every show, Chad emails us and asks us what we'd like to discuss, and I never respond, even though there's things I'd like to discuss. There are teams as we go through each conference that I think are being overvalued/overrated. We'll see if he calls on the team that I feel is.
Well, I think actually the next team I want to discuss actually in this conference, stick in this conference, and Sleek, let me go over to you, huh? How about the Louisville Cardinals?
They are not the team I was referring to.
I'm actually very high on this team.
Oh, I am.
Coming off of a very incredible win at North Carolina over the weekend.
Well, they've certainly played one of the toughest schedules and struggled early on in the preseason NIT with fairly close losses to Tennessee and Marquette. But even before the North Carolina game, they had some pretty respectable wins against Michigan State and at Seton Hall. But go figure, a coach who constantly gets blown out of Villanova actually wins decisively at North Carolina in his first try. That's certainly going to be impressive, and I'd say Louisville is certainly on the right path towards getting back to the NCAAs this year.
Well, beyond that, David, I think there's another team you want to discuss in this conference. Let me throw it.
Yeah, go back to the profiles. Okay. We have Louisville, who is unranked and still unranked coming into the day, and we had Florida State, who I think was ranked 10th or 11th. Let's look at these two profiles side by side, and which one stands out to you more?
Anyway. I think it's clear. You've got two quadrant one road wins on the left, and you have – no, the only road win is at Tulane on the right. I mean, it's simple, isn't it?
Yeah, and Purdue, LSU, maybe in the field, maybe they're not. I don't think they're certainly not protected seeds. They're certainly not slam dunks into the top half of the bracket, at least not right now. Purdue's 9-7, I think. And like, when you look at why is Florida State ranked 10th with that. Yeah. I mean, when they haven't beaten anybody that's really in the top half of the bracket.
I think after tonight, David, you're going to see Florida State come down to the more of the middle of the pack when we're trying to do brackets, because that loss at Pittsburgh now stands out. I think the one saving grace Florida State had was their only three losses were Virginia, Duke, and Villanova. And when you say that, it just looks like, okay, they could easily be still a top 10 team. We don't know, because losing to those three teams doesn't tell us much. But once you throw in a Pittsburgh loss, and then you look at the teams that they've really only beat so far, now we're starting to really question them.
Especially, as Rocco points out, the Duke game, because everybody saw it. It was the national game of its time slot. Yeah. It was the definition of a good loss. And, yeah, I know I'm not as big fan of good losses per se, but I think in terms of pollsters, it certainly was a good loss.
Yeah, and I think this Florida State team has some good pieces on it. But, like, we kind of got into this the other night on the bracket show, and I just think this shows that Chad should not be allowed to arbitrate because he overruled me on Florida State. Didn't you, Chad?
At the time, they had only those three losses that Rocco mentioned, so I got to defend myself a little bit here. Joby, coming up this weekend, we have one of those very rare battles of, even though – Duke is going to fall after the loss. Say it is number one versus number one, technically. AP number one versus Coach's Poll number one Saturday night. But Virginia's got to get by a home game against Va Tech.
And they lost the last time they lost to John Paul Jones was a year ago, right around this time, to Virginia Tech. And Virginia's not looking ahead to Duke, I think, because of that, which will help them. But Virginia Tech's good. Virginia Tech also has matchup problems for Virginia more than anybody else in the conference because of their outside shooting. They looked very UMBC, but better. How about that? but Virginia has been building a lot of boats at home lately because they've been boat racing a lot of people lately. I mean, that Florida State 13-point score fool you. It was 62-36 with 2 minutes to go. and the subs gave up 16 points in 2 minutes. You know, and by subs I mean the manager was out on the court.
What would you think Virginia Tech's biggest win is? Because it looks like while they've been bloating out their record and winning their games, they haven't exactly been pasting teams that aren't ranked teams.
Well, Purdue, I'd say Rocco's Washington team and Purdue. Two teams that are in the field, believe it or not, I have in the field. The Washington we can argue all day on.
Yeah.
But they're wearing dark jerseys, right?
Oh, right. On paper, okay, Joby, I agree with you on the matchup standpoint. I really think Va Tech UVA is fascinating from an X's and O's. But on paper, there's a few planets in between Virginia Tech and Virginia. You know, when your best wins are Purdue and Washington, that's just not quite.
Va Tech lost one game, David, and it was by a point. They're 1 point away from being undefeated.
Oh, yeah, they've really shown that they can run roughshod over NIT teams. I mean, I give them that. But, I mean, up until now, they just haven't played anybody in the same universe.
I think you're undercounting a very good Purdue team that because of their record.
We'll get into it later, but I think that's the only
– Purdue because of their record, yes.
That's probably the only win of note that Penn State has is against Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech's just in a situation where you're kind of left with just giving them the benefit of the doubt until they really start playing the meat of their schedule. They're everything's based on a foundation of sand and not concrete at this point, but that gives them the biggest range of volatility once they do start playing their big games.
Good call.
I just like picking on you.
It's a fight for first place. The Duke-Virginia game is not a fight for first place right now. Virginia Tech is a fight for first place.
Huge week for Virginia. How about the week ahead for North Carolina? Rocco, is this Notre Dame team one of the teams that just you know, could make a little bit of noise still here? I mean, not really on anybody's radar, but they don't really have any bad losses. They have a solid overall record. Does Carolina need to be a lookout after what happened against Louisville?
I mean, possibly, but I saw Notre Dame play in person already this year, and they don't have the kind of talent that they've had in years past. They do have a great coach still, of course, Mike Bray, and I think they will knock off a couple of teams just because they're fundamentally sound, good team basketball, but they don't have a guy that can just take over the game this year. And so asking them to go and asking me to go predict them to win at North Carolina, I'm just not going to do. Okay. And I honestly don't think they're a tournament team. I don't think they'll have enough on the resume by the end to do it. I just don't think they have enough talent.
I'll probably get skewered for saying this, but I want to see how Georgia Tech reacts after their win against Syracuse, because they're doing a good impersonation of a team like Wichita State, where their offense, very average, but their defense is actually close to a top 10 if you go by KenPom ratings right there.
Yeah, number 11 defense in the nation for Georgia Tech, and they've got a trip to Clemson, and then they're hosting Louisville, so we'll see what plays out there this week. Let's move over to another conference. Let's head over to the Big Ten, where as we record this, Maryland is taking Wisconsin to the woodshed.
Yes, it's a murder on television.
But let's start at the top there with the team that is either number two or number four, although Rocco, quite frankly, I think they're the best team in the nation, and that's the Michigan Wolverines.
I'm with you. I honestly don't – you guys probably don't believe me, but – I don't look at the AP Top 25 unless the game's on TV and I see the number next to the team. Mm-hmm. And when I saw Duke against Syracuse with a number one next to them tonight, I couldn't believe more people had Duke number one than Michigan. But it shows how meaningful the polls are. Yes, Michigan, I think, is the deserving number one team in the country. They're lights out at home, and they're getting it done on the road. They just have such a great, balanced team and well coached. It's a really fun team to watch. So couldn't agree more on that.
And Michigan State obviously really good too. But Joby, how about this Maryland team? As we're mentioning, recording right now, up big on Wisconsin.
They're doubling up Wisconsin as we speak. In the team sheet.
Yeah, and they had the win over Minnesota last week.
They're building.
Yeah, not that Maryland.
We're not talking about
put those two side by side and point out the differences.
How about that one? Feel better.
Beat Maryland.
One's ranked number one, and the other's never mind. One's a centenary candidate.
No, Maryland. Yeah, and even that. Seton Hall loss at home. I mean, come on, Seton Hall beating a lot of teams like Kentucky, et cetera. So, no, Maryland. And the thing is, Maryland has, you know, the great freshman Smith. He's starting to really get it together. You saw that at the end of the game this week against Indiana. Maryland is, you know, if they're a stock, they're a growth stock. You know, coming up, you're catching them now. Do I think they can climb and win the Big Ten? No. I mean, the Michigan schools have got a lockdown right now of some sort in terms of that. But could Maryland get sniff eventually the top 16 and get a protected seed? They have the potential to do so. I'm not saying they will. I think they'll fall just short, but they have the potential and the pieces because they actually have talent. I don't know if Turgeon's the one who's going to take him to that land, though.
David, I got to give you your 3 seconds here. Nebraska this evening, huge road win at Indiana, third best net rating in the conference.
Yes, and when you put today into perspective, I mean, when you look at basketball in the state of Indiana, it's had great moments. Bobby Knight, Hoosiers, was based on another great moment. I think one of the greatest moments ever was just Tim Miles setting foot. What? You didn't let me finish my thought.
Stalika, how about a team that I really don't know that much about, but they did pick a nice win over Ohio State. What about the Iowa Hawkeyes?
Oh, I thought you were going to be leading into the rumble on the Raritan where Rutgers actually knocked off Ohio State in the preceding game.
Well, we can get to that, too. I could put Ohio State up on the other side of the screen here. But how about both these teams, both Iowa and Ohio State? Two teams, I think, are going in opposite directions, aren't they?
Well, Iowa was another team that's kind of middling in the Big Ten, but this is a conference where we could be seeing possibly 9 or 10 teams getting in, and beating Nebraska and Iowa State are going to be the most noteworthy wins. I'm not sure I'd probably say personally that winning at Northwestern is necessarily going to be one of their signature wins, like Ohio State or even to a lesser extent Pittsburgh, or winning 2K Classic against teams like Oregon and UConn. But Their only three losses, pretty respectable, at Michigan State and Purdue. Only the loss against Wisconsin would be any question, but if that's your worst loss, you're in great shape.
Yeah, they're in great shape. Rocco, that other team on the screen there on the right-hand side, hasn't won yet in 2019, including a loss at Rutgers.
It's been a rough go for the Buckeyes. I do think they'll bounce back, though. I like their nucleus. Think they have a really strong coach. And I think they'll find a way to get into the field. But, you know, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago on the show. There's 10 projected teams that are tournament caliber right now. At somewhere along the line, one or two of them are going to fade. Maybe it's Wisconsin. Maybe it's these guys. But things are going to ebb and flow. We've got two more months to go.
Yeah, Chad, one of the things about Iowa is the game against Purdue kind of bugged me a little bit. I mean, I guess my feelings on Purdue are well documented, and they got beaten pretty bad, but and they lost three of their first four in conference play. But since then, they've really pulled it together. I'm starting to become a believer in Iowa again. So I think that they're – I'm putting a – if you're buying or selling the stock, I think Iowa's stock is going to continue to rise. And Purdue, who you have up there, they've got Rutgers at home. They should win that one. If they get the home win against Indiana, I know it's a home win, but I think that that might be the thing that finally gets their motors started, just more from a momentum standpoint, and allows them to get the wins that they need.
But other than the Notre Dame loss, I can't fault them, Joby, for any of those losses that Purdue has.
No, they played a tough schedule, but at some point you have to win that schedule.
At Wisconsin.
Well, and that's the thing is, before the Wisconsin win, let's say we had projected out the remainder of their schedule at 8-8 with a win and a loss in the Big Ten tournament, so 9-9. They would have been sitting at the end of the year at 18-15. You are not getting in the NCAA tournament, even with this resume, at 18-15. And 8-8, you know, a 9-9 record in the Big Ten is, you know, extremely realistic. A 500 record, yeah, is extremely realistic. I guess it's 10-10 now. But you know, that's for any good but not amazing, not a team with Michigan at the beginning of their name this year. Purdue, though, with the win at Wisconsin, might have indeed, like you said, turned the corner. Then you get a win against Rutgers, and that Indiana game is huge. And so if all of a sudden they've piled up these wins, they're not looking at 9-9, 10-10 sort of records. They're looking at four games above 500, and that all of a sudden that 18-15 record that I described goes to 20-13. You're in. 19-14 with their schedule and their record is probably in. So, and I'd say with the field the way it looks this year, probably definitely in. So it is very important for them to take care of business. Maybe that Wisconsin one will launch them. And I agree with David. Indiana. So important to them.
I think it's also noteworthy to point out on Purdue's schedule, they only play bottom feeders Northwestern, Rutgers, and Illinois once. Penn State is the only one of the bottom four they're playing twice. So, and if they were to go, let's say, 10-10 or 9-11, I would not have an issue with putting Purdue in, depending on who they actually beat.
Well, what about the Indiana Hoosiers? That's one more team. Rocco, I got their profile on the left here. They lost a couple games this week, including the game tonight, and four of their next five are on the road. Real tough stretch for them.
Tough stretch for a team, you know, relying on a star freshman along with Juwan Morgan. It'll be interesting. I know one thing, David Griggs and Tim Miles are definitely going to be Hoosier fans the rest of the way. If they do end up having a solid year, that will finally be the road win that got away from Nebraska last year.
Yeah, and it's kind of the – like Nebraska has had close calls on the road. They finally get it done tonight in a big way. But Indiana, I don't think it's time to hit the panic button, but it's time to sort of feel some urgency here. They're 1-4 on the road in true road games. And when you look at four of their next five on the road, they really need Rutgers and they really need – what? There's another one there, Northwestern. I think that they almost need both of those. Yep. Because they're going, you know, that would get them the 3-6 in true road games, which is not good, but not awful. If they don't get any of those and they fall to 1-8 in true road games, are you starting to say bubble or even outside the bubble.
Better not lose to Illinois either.
Yeah.
Well, that would make it about a 7-game losing streak at that point, because they're not going to, you're going to assume they don't lose, assume they don't beat Michigan at home also there. It's,
right.
I mean, the one home game in the middle of that stretch is Michigan. Yeah. Let's take a look quickly at the upcoming schedule here in the Big Ten. And David, what games are you circling as they come up on the screen here?
Okay, they'll be up here. Whiskey at Maryland, we're watching that right now. Iowa, Michigan State at Nebraska. For a couple reasons, Michigan State, a likely protected seat. There's been some rumblings about us even moving them all the way up to the one line. Nebraska, probably 8-9 seedish type team, but a real home court hero. Like, it is harder to win at Nebraska than it is to win at other teams that are not ranked in the top 25. It's harder to win there than it is to beat teams that are in the top 25. I think that that's not going to be an easy game for Michigan State, and the Nebraska fans are going to be jacked. I'm probably really looking forward to that one. And, of course, Indiana-Purdue. It's always great, and this time it's kind of a stakes game.
Let's go over to the Big East. And Stalica, now that you're back with us, you being our Big East guy here, you want to talk about your Xavier Musketeers, or you want to talk about a good Big East team?
Well, we can discuss Xavier, because they're actually doing a little bit of a sabotage on their own. If you saw their game against Butler yesterday, where they were kind of going back and forth. You had a couple runs going, but Butler looked like they had Xavier dead and buried with a 10-point lead with 4 minutes to play. That's not the type of game they usually blow, but Xavier throws some pressure at them. They start missing free throws in critical junctures, and at the end of the day, Xavier escapes with a 1-point win and suddenly puts teams like Butler, and even Creighton also had a bit of a tough week, losing back-to-back home games to Marquette and Villanova. Suddenly, this could be looking like a 4-bid conference, or even 3 bids, if heaven forbid, a team like St. John's starts to implode if Shamori Ponds is out for any extended length of time.
Yeah, Rocco, St. John's losing a home game to DePaul without Ponds, so I think you put an asterisk by that loss, but still, it's a loss to DePaul at home.
Loss to DePaul at home, it's a tough one, and you know, you can only forgive them so much for that. But I think, to be honest, I think DePaul is much improved.
Yes.
They just beat Seton Hall and St. John's back-to-back. And the interesting thing about this league is, you know, if DePaul gets another win, I think even KenPom rating-wise, all 10 teams are inside the top 100 once DePaul makes another move. I think they're at 105 right now.
Yeah.
So that's the crazy thing, is because we got used to this league putting out 6 or 7 teams into the tournament. Now we're looking at only 4, or like John said, it could be as low as 3. But we've got so much balance. Every time any two teams in this league play, it's like a war. I got the chance to watch that Georgetown-Providence game over the weekend, and it was like one of the most entertaining games I saw, and it was for, you know, the losing team just trying to avoid the basement.
Just 5 or 6 teams getting in, but we're also used to seeing 2 protected seeds every year, at least in the formation of the new Big East. Now Marquette and Villanova may end up filling that void, but even that's not 100% guaranteed right now.
Yeah, Villanova, who we were, or at least I was, pretty down on, 4-0 in conference play, and they haven't exactly like had it. It's not like they've been playing the bottom of the basement at home either. Is Nova finally back, or are they going to continue to be inconsistent the rest?
Well, they haven't played Marquette yet. They haven't played Seton Hall yet, so I don't think they've played the top yet either. They won at Creighton, which is nice, but
yeah.
But Creighton just is a team that doesn't lose to bad teams but doesn't beat good teams this year.
Yeah, fair enough.
How about the team on the left there, Joby Butler? Killer week for them, 2 1-point losses this week.
Yeah, we joked a couple of weeks ago, saying, well, that team got a good win, they beat Butler. Well, that team got a good win, they beat Butler. At some point, we go, well, maybe Butler's not that good. You know, I think we're starting to get to that tipping point of maybe Butler's just not that good. What an awful Saturday, Sunday for the Big East. Oh, yeah, we talked about St. John's loss, talked about Butler, we've referenced Creighton. Oh, my God. I mean, you almost couldn't have plotted out a worse weekend in a lot of ways, you know, from that standpoint. Butler, like its other Big East brethren, needs to pop out from the crowd. Luckily, as Rocco pointed out very accurately, everybody's in the top 100 in the net. And that's, remember, that's the key one. You know, put Ken Bond to the side in the net. They're all Georgetown's, I think, 101. Everybody else is top 100. That means a team that goes out and goes 12-6 is going to have a lot of good wins and be able to climb into the tournament. I don't think Butler's that team.
There is one alarming statistic I saw on one of the Butler boards earlier today. Guess what LaVal Jordan's record on the road is in his 3 years as a head coach?
Well, I know what it is this year. What is it?
Most of this is going to be skewed from his time in Milwaukee, but it is 5-24.
Ooh, that's rough.
And guess where their next road game is, and that's going to be at DePaul, which is suddenly looking like a real snake pit, as the puppet likes to call it.
Yeah, and when you look at this, it's just got to – in this happens every now and then. You know, a loss by 3 to Indiana, one at Seton Hall, one at Xavier – you know, so essentially they're 3 plays away or 4 plays away from being so far inside the bubble that they're like on the 5 or 6 line.
Yeah. One quick other quick team, Rocco, on the right there. I've got the one team in the Big East that I think is not only solidly in the field, but could be vying for a protected seed. How about Marquette? They did pick up, have a good week this week.
Yeah, they had a real nice week. And I looked at Marquette pretty hard during – my bracket exercise the last 24 hours. And so it would, yeah, I think they're a strong candidate to win the league. I think right now, if you had to guess, it's probably down to them or Villanova, but so much more basketball to go. I guess the only warning signs is when they got blown out, by 20 at St. John's, and, you know, they didn't show up at Indiana either. So those types of warning signs scare me a little bit for the future. But when they
need road wins.
Well, they just – Rocco, they were just – I mean, come on, it was January 1st. They just had too much of a New Year tonight.
Well, the Indiana, partying.
I'll give them that one. But the Indiana game, I was really shocked when I saw that score on that night, although it was like the second week.
And we didn't know how good Indiana was. I mean, you know, I think we all can agree Indiana is a strong tournament team, right?
Well, right. Not if
I would not have said that.
Joe, but here's the upcoming schedule coming up for the Big East, starting with Marquette Georgetown tomorrow night. Yeah. But I mean, which is there a game you're circling here, really, or is it kind of?
Let's see if a team can pop out. Like I said, I was the one even discussing them. St. John's at Butler is going to play a big role. Can St. John's be that team that pops out? They've got the underlying good record. They have now a couple of decent wins. Can they win on the road at Butler? If they can, they have the potential to be that team that goes 12-6, 11-7 with enough good wins that they become that fourth Big East team. But they could also play much like they did last year. That, you know, how serious this Pons injury is, that's a big deal. So, and I don't think they're going to get a pass for too long if they go on a losing streak. So St. John's season isn't in the balance at Butler, but man, is this going to, we're going to look back and say, this is a big game.
Let's move over to the Big 12, where as we record this, Kansas is actually down 2 at home to Texas. David, you're talking about how schizophrenic Syracuse was. I think we could add Texas as a close second, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So two things at play here. You've got a Texas team that's all over the place, a win over North Carolina on a neutral floor, and a loss at home to Radford, who by Big South standards is good, but by tournament standards really isn't. And you also have Kansas still trying to adjust to life after the injury bugs hit without having any real post play. And can they do it? So even though we're to January, even though we have a good feel for a lot of the teams by now, you're sort of going through that exercise again with Kansas to see what they're going to look like without 2 key players due to the injuries. And you know, if Texas wins tonight, it's a huge win for Texas, but is it also an indication that maybe Kansas is waning?
Well, Rocco, I actually heard today that they're trying to get D'Souza now reinstated. They've reapplied for his eligibility to try to help out at Kansas.
I did not hear the news.
Yes. They've said that he's now set out half a season, which is, you know, the normal penalties, I believe, a third of the season.
It's nine games, typically.
And knowing Kansas's luck in these types of scenarios, they'll usually get their way.
Right. But if they can't get him reinstated, I mean, struggling at home tonight with a Texas team that is the exact opposite of a home court hero, I guess. We can't call them that. but let me pull the rest of the schedule back up here from this past week. And I don't know, what else did you see this week, Rocco, in this conference?
Well, I saw an impressive week, a little bit under the radar, not to steal the real term of under the radar, by Oklahoma State. I was impressed the way that they fought off Texas, who kind of desperately wanted to win that game, and then went into West Virginia and kicked them while they're down. It's not an easy place to win in Morgantown, especially when you're a kind of lower Big 12 team like Oklahoma State. So, well, good week for the Cowboys. And then there was one other team that I wanted to point out, but
I've got a team.
David, is this what you're talking about?
Oh and two
on a very rough week this week. But can you talk about this TCU profile here a little bit?
Well, the profile is that it's lousy. There's nothing against anybody that's solidly in the tournament. If you use your imagination, maybe you could get Fresno State in there, but probably not. But again, it's just kind of weird. Some really good efforts in games that they've lost, right in there with Oklahoma on the road, right in there with Kansas on the road, albeit against a depleted Kansas team. But you know, a team that's getting a lot of, are they still in the rankings, or do they drop out?
They're not in the rankings, but Joby, you're a numbers guy, and you look at the first thing, you look at the strength of schedule. Oh, the 14th strength of schedule of the nation, but where is it?
Exactly. Well, it's games like that Lipscomb game they lost, but now, remember what Central Michigan is? I think, you know, 16-2. So if
some of these teams have bloated.
Indiana State next to Drake is the second best team. The Missouri Valley, I think, this year. It's actually they're playing a lot of not NIT teams, CBI teams, and they took care of business.
But I think another problem for TCU is going to be Jalen Fisher's injury status, and he's going to be out indefinitely.
Jalen Fisher being out is huge, because he's not just for the points he produces and the ability to run the floor for them, but it's the glue. He's the glue guy, without a doubt, on their team.
No doubt.
The thing about TCU, which was interesting, we mentioned the Oklahoma game, we mentioned the Kansas game. Kansas desperately needed that because of the Azubuike. You know, they have to prove they beat somebody without Azubuike. So they got a little goodwill that they're right now pissing away against the Longhorns.
No, they just took a 4-point lead, actually.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, well, maybe that TCU win, which, you know, it was a lot closer at the very end. I mean, Kansas made free throws to make it 9. I was sitting in a sports book. I know people were not happy because the line was 6 and they were not happy. But maybe TCU just isn't that. Maybe they're the Butler of the Big 12. You know, I mean, except they just haven't racked up the losses yet to do that.
I think the one other notable game in this conference this week, Rocco, on the right side there, K-State. The win at Iowa State really desperately needed that game, and they were down that game.
Yeah. And Wade came back. He didn't play a lot of minutes, but I think just his presence gave the team confidence, and Brown took over at the end to seal the deal against the Cyclones. And that was huge because, you know, in a bubble scenario we're looking at today, that gets them back on the right side of the bubble, in my opinion. And I think if Wade can keep growing back into health from you know, just seeing a lot of other guys coming back from injury similar to his, I'd probably take 2-3 games to get back into form. And they've got plenty of time to work him back into the regular rotation and be a strong team and be a dangerous team in the bracket. They could end up maybe near that 9 seed area that they were in last year when they made their Elite Eight run.
Yeah, with that win, their profile looks pretty good because, you know, they don't really have any bad losses, even losing at Tulsa. Tulsa pretty strong at home this year. Yeah. Without that win, they're looking pathetic.
Makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does.
Silica, let me bring up the upcoming schedule here, the Big 12 on the right-hand side there. Tell us, obviously those top two games are going on right now as we record this, but what are you looking forward to this week in this conference? Just all of them? Or?
Well, we alluded to it earlier with the Jalen Fisher factor. They have to win against a depleted West Virginia team because you don't want to be losing to a team at the bottom of the conference, even as loaded as the Big 12, but at the same time, you also have a game on Saturday at Kansas State, who's slowly starting to figure their own way out.
I think we also got to circle that Iowa State-Texas Tech game Wednesday night.
Yeah, and we got the Red River shootout on Saturday, the first half of it anyway.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to call out Baylor lost a real crucial player, Tristan Clark. I think he's going to be out for the season. 14 points, 6 rebounds. Their leading scorer. I know Makai Mason's finally healthy, but now no Tristan Clark. It's going to be tough for the Bears.
I also like to call out that they've lost to Texas Southern and Stephen F. Austin at home.
Without Mason, though.
Okay. Let's head over to the SEC. Joby, let me start things off with the SEC.
Oh boy, do I have a bone to pick with this league.
Okay, but I want to start at the top, Joby, though.
Yeah, this Tennessee
team that went in a gator chomped the Gators, the entire team did after the game.
They are good. I mean, plain and simple. Remember, they also beat Gonzaga. It's not just about beating Southeastern Conference teams. This is Rick Barnes had some really good teams at Texas. He did some work at Clemson, but this to date, we could see it all fall apart, is the best coaching job I've seen him do. And they look good. They are stronger than Big Blue.
We have a minor scoreboard problem here, I think.
Wow. That is.
Please ignore that score, that highlight. Sorry, Joby, go ahead. That's a hell of a sport.
Well, I mean, they played both days. That snow was pretty rough on the Missouri Tigers, that's for sure. But Tennessee, they are a one seed in every bracket you're going to see for the most part. Especially when Duke's lost tonight, you probably knock them off a few one lines. Very deserving of it. Just look at that beautiful profile, and I have a feeling this league has strength. Will give them more wins as long as they take care of business. They can afford a couple of losses here or there. You will, once again, I think the Volunteers will be a one seed.
I agree.
David, you had a bone to pick with this league, though. I'll let me throw it over to you next.
Well, okay. Well, again, the exercise of teams that are overvalued and overrated, I think there's at least one. I shouldn't say the league. It was more or less just two teams. One is Auburn and one is Mississippi State. And if you pull up their profiles, you'll notice something about them. There's Auburn on one. Here's Mississippi State on the other. You should notice that neither one of them really has anything on it.
Yeah. Between the two of them, one quadrant one winner was at Dayton. Now, there's nothing really bad on either profile.
Correct. And I'm not here to imply that these are not tournament caliber teams or really good teams. I just don't think they're teams that should be ranked in the teens or would be seeded anywhere close to a protected seed if we were to do that today. That was my point.
Well, Rocco, I know you did a bracket today. Well, what about this Auburn team? I mean, number 17 in the net, 14 in the old RPI, some great metrics, but where's the beef, you know?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, all their damage has been done on their home court. They did beat Arizona in Maui and Xavier Stalika.
Overtime, by the way. Going against Xavier.
Yeah, going off Chad, your favorite metric, and I like it too, is just look at what they've done against the board. Washington's barely in maybe today, and they've crushed them at home, but Arizona's kind of barely in. They beat them on a neutral, and outside of that, Murray State, who's more of an auto bid type of team, if they're in, they just haven't played the meat of the schedule still. So it's a lot like Virginia Tech scenario, but maybe even a little worse because they've got three losses.
Now, they do have all top 100 teams left the rest of the way, so it's not an easy way for them.
And South Carolina, the one that's not, is showing some strength lately.
Speaking of teams.
They're looking like a vintage Temple team from the, what is it, late 90s, early 2000s, where they just absolutely suck non-conference despite a tough schedule and then just start sabotaging the league once league play starts.
Yeah, South Carolina is interesting. I see Chad's pulling them up.
Try to pull them up.
As soon as
– They lost to Wyoming.
Yeah, they did.
There it is.
Yeah. Are they the answer to the question, which team is going to, like, just explode in the second half of the season and go from on no one's radar that no one is paying attention to all the way to solidly in the field? They might.
They got a long way to go still, David. A long
way to go. Yeah. But their next – look at their next three games. I think they're all winnable. And then they have Auburn at home, who we just got done talking about. If they win three of those four or all four of those four, they'll still have a long way to go. But they'll be not quite as far as what they had 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, their metrics are nowhere near consideration at this point also. I mean, all in the hundreds there. But Stalika, I wanted to bring you in on the team I pulled up on the right there. You also put together a bracket today where you ranked this team, I believe, as a four seed. And I don't know what you were smoking, but I want you to give you a chance to sell me on them. Ole Miss Rebels with that 241 non-conference strength of schedule.
Well, even though it's actually legal where I was for the past 6 weeks, I was not there partaking in those substances. But I must say, I was actually impressed with the Rebels, a.k.a. Rebel with a Cause here, because in just the span of about a week, they've gone from kind of iffy under Kermit Davis to suddenly looking like one of the most improved teams, if not the most improved team in the country, where you consider where they were last year. You win at Vandy. Okay, nice road win. You beat Auburn by 15. That'll get our attention. And winning at Mississippi State, where the Bulldogs, I don't think they lost at home yet this year. Suddenly, you've got my attention as a team that could certainly be a viable noisemaker. And if you look at their upcoming schedule with LSU, Arkansas, and at Alabama, the opportunity is certainly there to continue to climb.
Well, yeah, this team has my attention too, Stalika. They just don't quite have nearly – yes, you displayed that this team has your attention when you posted your bracket today.
Well, but I will defend Stalika. The J&G has them 15, which is a four seed.
Oh, for God.
I mean, I'm just saying I probably would put a – Kentucky, they use the same conference ahead of them. But the fact of the matter is, those are good wins. They don't have necessarily bad losses necessarily. Cincinnati you could argue over, but they're probably still in. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, the middle and lower half of this bracket just hasn't gelled yet. And so a team that's done that, done exactly what Stalika said over the last week, you got to look at.
Oh, yeah. And I'll say this for
it's
Ole Miss.
It's a real pick.
Yeah, I think
– Florida State. Who lost to Pitt?
Oh, I like them more than Florida State, yeah.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the teams they're competing with, though, for the four line. That's exactly the type of teams. It's Florida State, it's Temple, it's Kentucky, it's Maryland, it's Iowa. That's your four – that's around your four line.
Temple?
Temple.
Well, that's not
a minute here, Joby. I think we're going to go to the American after this. But, Rock, I first want to throw the next week's schedule of the SEC up there on the board for you to take a look at here. We've got a couple big ones, including the LSU-Ole Miss game tomorrow night.
LSU-Ole Miss, I think that's going to be a great one. They're both undefeated in conference. Ole Miss has all the momentum, but they're going to have to get refocused quickly. I think LSU's been a little bit hibernating since a couple big non-conference games, and so they're ready for a big test. That'll be a really, really, really good game, I think, tomorrow. Also, I want to say – that Kentucky at Auburn will probably be electric down in Auburn on Saturday. So that'll be a good one to watch.
And a big week for Alabama, a winnable road game at Missouri, then a game at Tennessee, and a team that could use some wins there also.
Well, they need to get that one at Mizzou. Mizzou just not having it this year. I fear that we might not see a Mizzou-Kansas matchup in the NCAA tournament this year. I mean, it's starting to concern me.
I'm going over to the American, and Joby, I want you to tell me why Temple's a 4 seed.
They're 6 right now, but they're the type of team. Temple, hey, they beat Houston, as we know. Yeah, I mean, pull up the profile. It's actually better than you think, sort of thing. But, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
they beat Houston.
And no, that's about Houston. What I thought it was. That's
they won at Missouri. Hey, you know, Davidson's okay, and they have no real bad losses because neutral court lost to VCU. VCU's in most people's brackets right now, or at least is either the A-10 champ or even at – but they're actually under the at-large line in most brackets. So, but that's – once again, we just looked at it. That's better than Auburn's. Profile. But that's the point is Auburn is in 4 seed line in other brackets, you see.
Again, not in my
look brain. At who that you're competing with. Ole Miss, Auburn, North Carolina State, you know, I mean, these are the teams that are you get to at this point. Virginia, Marquette, you know, all these Oklahoma, they're already in at this point. Yeah, the people go, oh, that's definitely better. You know,
I think the other ultimate irony about ultimate irony about Temple is they seem to be able to beat the higher quality teams, but you look at landmines like East Carolina and Tulane. Yeah. This is not the year to be tripping up against those teams, unlike Temple, a team that's listed to the right.
Temple is I've nicknamed Temple over and over again as the glass tiger because they are a two-hit wonder in a season, most likely. I'm waiting for their other hit. They might not have it on the schedule, unfortunately, because the American is, you know, hey, it's rising. You know, like the Titanic rose after being sunk. But the I think Temple's solidly in the field right now. And if they do not slip up, they're going to be wearing white.
A potential trap week this week at East Carolina, and then that big five matchup with Penn, who's
over. And that could change everything. They have to take care of business, obviously, but they actually have the foundation to do it now.
David, what about that team on the right, the Bearcats?
With the exception of the East Carolina loss, it's a team that's pretty much held serve. You had described Butler as I think Creighton is. They beat the decent and mediocre and bad teams, but don't beat any of the good ones. And that's kind of what I think of when I look at Cincinnati. They were not blown out, but not really. They didn't really make Mississippi State sweat all that much either. Losing to Ohio State in a game that made you want to gouge your eyes out, albeit it was so early in the year. But there's just – I mean, I think they've done enough to get in, but there isn't anything that gets me all that excited about them.
UCF also 3-0. They're in first place right now. Houston 16-1 overall. But
pull up UCF, Chad, because we were all big on them coming into the year. They've only lost 2 games, and at least in my – I kind of forgot about them.
Both losses were barely, right?
So. Yeah, they were.
But the bad loss, the Florida Atlantic loss was a bad loss at home, though. That was
20, whatever.
And they're not as good as Temple because Temple won at Missouri, I'd like to point out.
Well, UCF beat Temple, though.
Yeah.
Oh, but they lost to Temple. But Temple lost to them. You're right.
Yeah.
Here's the upcoming schedule, Stalica, the upcoming schedule in the American. I don't know what are we circling here, if anything. Maybe it's that Penn-Temple game, actually. It's a non-conference
game. I'm actually going to circle the South Florida games because I want to see if this team is for real, whether it is going to eventually fold. I know they had a nice home win against UConn, but going to Cincinnati and then hosting Houston, that's about as close to a gauntlet as you're going to find in this conference. But at the same time, Cincinnati and Wichita State is a game you'd think we would be a mortal lock to highlight, but with the Shockers slumbering this year, not so much.
Yeah, Rocker, you're on the South Florida bandwagon also, aren't you?
I want to be.
Okay.
I want to be. And they fought Temple tough. That was an overtime loss.
Yeah, it was.
And they fought Tulsa tough. I watched both of those tough losses for the Bulls. But I like their style of play. They just play very confidently. They play tough defense. I think they got good characteristics to build a winning streak. But yeah, like Luca said, the schedule coming up is really going to tell us a lot. They've got to answer the bell.
I don't think they got it in them. I want to like them too, but I just can't.
But I think they're more Wichita State than Wichita State is when you look at their KenPom offense of 258 and defense of around 50.
Yeah. Let's briefly look at the A-10. We mentioned that VCU team earlier. I think them, along with Davidson, St. Louis, Dayton, we've got a bunch of teams here. But David, let me ask you, is this a one-bid league or is there a shot for two here?
Well, there's a shot for two, but it has to be somebody in – they're not doing themselves any favors. I think VCU has the best overall out-of-conference profile. So they're the best ones with a chance to get inside the bubble. But if
they lost
anybody,
to Davidson this week, though.
What's that?
They did.
And that is not what you want to be doing. I still think that if VCU goes on a tear and gets to 15-3 or 16-2, they would be inside the bubble. I think just about any of those teams would. But I don't think I'll put it this way. I still think that there's a decent chance that the number one first place team is inside the bubble if it's one of those four and they end up running away from the league. If not, then I think it's only going to get one.
If we're going to look at another figure that the puppet likes to throw out, pull up a Davidson's profile because I want to see if they're still undefeated at home this year because that's traditionally one of the more difficult places to play in the league.
It is, and I don't think they have lost at home, John.
They have not lost at home.
One of those wins was against Dartmouth by three.
This is the problem we see with these A-10 profiles. Yeah, Davidson, solid metrics, but Rocco, one tier two win, no tier one wins.
I think Davidson's definitely leaning more towards the must win the A-10 tournament, at least at this point, unless they go on a huge tear. But I do think VCU with their win at Texas and St. Louis with their win at Seton Hall, they actually have legitimate chances to have a really solid league season and have an opportunity to get in a large bid. And I think it's not inconceivable to get three bids with those two profiles.
Yeah.
Yeah. VCU also went over Temple.
Right. And you look at VCU, you look at these two profiles, I think if you look at VCU, if they can avoid losses to teams outside the top 60 the rest of the way, I think they got a chance.
I think Chad just did something unintentionally funny a moment ago. I'm like, was that really Ain't Louis? I saw him typing him up.
It ain't Louis. Okay. Yeah. Quickly, the upcoming schedule in the Atlantic 10. We've got, let's see.
Very quick.
There's actually a good game here.
Yeah, Dayton and VCU is a good game.
Dayton is not one of those tournament teams, even though they did get a nice win over Butler, but who hasn't, as we said. But Dayton has the potential to go out and beat you on a given week. VCU needs to take care of business at home to get that bid that we're talking about.
Let's talk about a couple of really good teams here. Let's start in the West Coast Conference with Gonzaga and Rocco. The Zags did pick up the win at San Francisco. The Dons tried to make a game of it, but I just don't think they had enough.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not sure if you guys stayed up for it. It was incredible.
Oh, it was fantastic. I know the margin was 13, but with the under four timeout, it was tied, wasn't it?
San Francisco actually took the lead with about 3:45 to go, and that was their last lead. I think they were up by one.
I think it was their last point.
probably. And it got really out of hand at the end. I don't know if you guys saw the clip that's been all over where that Gonzaga saved the ball out of bounds, but the guy was 6 foot out of bounds when he saved it, and the ref just let him play. Anyway, a lot of conspiracy theories going on for people betting on that game. But I think what the game did, especially that first 36 and a half minutes, where it felt like a heavyweight fight, at least for West Coast Conference standards. It was just phenomenal basketball. I was on at the same time as the Husky game, and I was honestly watching this game more than the Husky game, and it was great basketball. It was incredible. And it was, I've only lived in San Francisco 5 years. It was easily the biggest college basketball game that's happened in this city since I've lived here. And it was just cool to see the atmosphere and a packed house. It was rowdy. The team responded. I think this team's pretty special. I'm just concerned about the overall opportunities left to actually get in.
Yeah, I spent enough time in the Bay Area to hear some of the local radio hosts opine, would San Francisco actually win the Pac-12 this year, were they to play that schedule?
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean,
Talika, we've been joking about that here locally for about 4 weeks.
Yeah. Now, okay, Gonzaga is a one seed caliber team, in my opinion. Yeah.
Right.
And I know Frisco was at home. I mean, I know the USF was at home, but for 36 minutes, they were right in there. They're not going to – I don't think they're going to beat Gonzaga on the road in, or on a neutral floor, which is like when they would face them again. But this is a team that took Buffalo to the wall. And I know no one watched it. Well, everyone here did, but not a lot of people are aware of that game. And everybody is swinging from the nuts of the Buffalo Bulls, but no one – like San Francisco, that was another game where at the under four timeout, I think it was tied, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, they were right in that one.
That game felt exactly like this one until, you know, all hell broke loose the last 3 minutes.
San Francisco, though, has a St. Mary's problem. They don't have the win.
That's a fair observation, and
that's what brings us to this upcoming schedule. I mean, San Francisco really can't afford to lose any other games other than the Gonzaga games the rest of the way. They've got to win at Pacific this week. They've got to win against BYU,
and they probably need St. Mary's to continue winning because I think that's their most notable win so far.
And it's unfortunate San Diego tailed off because San Diego showed some strength out of conference. And given more weight, Loyola Marymount got off to that amazing start too. Though it's more about San Diego with their strong wins, and it's a shame because now a loss of San Diego doesn't carry the same weight because San Diego hasn't taken care of their own business.
Yeah, they've
fallen a little bit, but I think St. Mary's has really started to come back up, and you know, I think BYU is solid again, at least you know for WCC standards. There's actually six decent teams this year, which is usually just two or two and a half.
And while that's true for us, I don't know if the committee will actually recognize.
Yeah, that's the mystery.
Because you're talking about an 11-7 St. Mary's team right now, an 11-8 BYU. I think the West Coast is on par, if not better than the Pac-12. You know, at least at the top in the middle. But
and the bottom.
Well, I mean,
no, not the bottom.
But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't. At some point, unfortunately, the name on the jersey carries something, and it's a shame. It shouldn't, but it does.
Well, this league is spending money now. If you're reading, a lot of the enthusiast Adams posts, they're spending a lot of money. That's why you're seeing these games on ESPN2 now. And I think maybe it won't pay off this year, but you can see these programs are really growing. Even Santa Clara is getting hot right now, and they've got a couple of good players. So, and Romar down at Pepperdine is doing good things. So it is becoming a quality league in a hurry.
In fact, I think the league is also investing in Orleans Arena, where they can keep that conference tournament site for the foreseeable future as well.
Right. Is that Gonzaga Pepperdine game? The Palsies together again.
Let's keep moving here. We're almost out of time. We've got a couple more conferences to go through, but quickly the Mountain West Conference, where
Rebels.
Nevada bounced back from their loss to beat San Jose State and win at Fresno.
Big win.
UNLV and Boise still technically undefeated at the top of the conference, but I don't think we're talking about anything other than Nevada at this point. Although, I mean, Joby, is there a case for Utah State?
Now, the case, I think, now would be – it would have been Fresno had they been able to do it. Utah State, yeah, they got the win, but come on. There's not the opportunities to get multiple of those sort of wins, and it's a one-bid league. And
but I think
– I would say one-bid because Nevada is not losing the conference tournament. They're that well, much.
Yeah, losing at home was the killer for the Aggies, though, against Fresno State.
Yeah. Fresno, good team. I just don't think they're good enough, or at least not on paper. I don't think it's going to get good enough unless they beat Nevada, which they had the chance to do at home and couldn't.
By the way, I buried Wisconsin because they were getting doubled by Maryland. They just hit a three to take the lead with 2 minutes to go.
Oh, my God. I wasn't watching. I'm at it on me. Here they are. Like,
I got to change channels here. Wisconsin, like, doing dirt earlier, making a big comeback.
No, I've been looking at it the whole time.
That out to folks.
Attention to it. Wow.
But David, quickly, the upcoming schedule. Nevada's at a Boise State team. Boise State, horrific in non-conference, off to a 3-0 conference start, but I think it's a factor.
It's a mirage. Nevada's going to absolutely obliterate them.
And then they get Air Force at home. But let's take a look at, well, one other team that's in the top 25 right now, not one of these conferences, is Buffalo. We've mentioned them a few times already. I'll just pull their profile up here. They continue to win, and they are at Western Michigan here coming up tomorrow night, and then Eastern Michigan this weekend. They just keep rolling, David.
I think so. I think they roll all the way until maybe that game at Toledo. I like this Akron team, although if you've been paying attention to what's going on there, they've had a player charged with assault. A little bit of a locker room issue going on at Akron that could be affecting their chemistry. We'll get into that later, but the game at Toledo, a little disappointing too, now that they've gotten in the conference play. I really like them out of conference. I still kind of think this Kent State team has it in them to be really good. But I don't know if Buffalo is going to win them all, but they're probably going to be favored to win them all. And they're, I'll say this, as someone that talked all year long about how strong the MAC was, Buffalo is better than the – is more better, if that's the way to put it, than the rest of the league than I thought.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, I think it might even be a credit to a team like Mother Miami they played on Saturday, where the Red Hawks actually kept it close for a half and had a few chances to take a lead towards the end of the half, but they they failed to capitalize at the line, and needless to say, Buffalo just completely blew it open after halftime.
Buffalo's had a few strange first half. That non-D1 game against Lemoyne was tied at halftime. I don't think Lemoyne scored in the second half. But Rocco, is this a top four seed, though, Buffalo, protection seed?
I've got them just in the very last spot for the 16 on the seed list. But I think over time what's going to start to happen is a bunch of teams built below them are going to pick up huge wins, and it's going to be hard to keep Buffalo above them. I think the same thing's kind of happening to Houston, but it's even more severe for Buffalo because at least Houston gets cracks at teams like Temple and others in the AAC. So, but if Buffalo just goes all the way to the end with just that Marquette loss, I think there should be enough Armageddon in there to keep them at least close to the four line.
Yeah, if they do all that, I would think you would have to, and you would have to dig below the surface. But you're talking about winning some games on the road against teams that are phenomenally good at home.
Let's do a quick segue into Wednesday night's Under the Radar show and end with the Pac-12 conference.
Oh, I didn't realize we hadn't done them. I was all excited. I thought the show was over.
We might as well be over. Although, let's throw the one question there, Joby. Can we get multiple bids out?
Yeah, because the bubble tails off. Whether you're looking at the Big East not delivering as many teams as we thought, the SEC is probably not going to give us the full number that we thought. And the Big 12 probably will not deliver as many as we thought. I mean, the Big 12 is constantly looking at 8, you know, out of their 10 teams. They're not doing that probably this year. It's more like 6 or 7. That leaves room for, you know, we talk about the Arizona schools. Arizona State's look like crap the last week or so. Arizona's probably still in right now. Washington, Rocco, please. It's just a bereft of anything on a profile, but they keep winning. Until they lose, you almost have to say,
John Tytel just joined the call.
They're in.
Well, John Tytel, a perfect time to discuss Pac-12.
Is he on?
John T., how are you? How are you? You want to discuss a little Pac-12 with us?
I don't, but I'm glad you guys are running late because I'm going to squeeze in dinner with a longtime college friend, so thank you for that. Same old, Bay Area sucks. Arizona miraculously 4-0. The Beavers are who I want to talk about because I did say, I think a month or two ago, that this team had a prayer of competing. I did not think that they were going to go 3-0, considering they went 7-11 in Pac-12 play last year. They beat the California schools from LA schools, I should say, and Ducks. All four of their non-conference losses by 3 to 6 points. They've been in every single game. I really thought that the key this year was going to be all the coaches' kids. You got Ethan Stephen Thompson, whose dad, Stephen Sr., is an assistant. You got Trace Tinkle, whose father, Wayne, is the head coach. But the X factor of all people, 7-foot junior college transfer Kyler Kelly, he's leading the nation in blocks over 4 a game, even though he did not start the first 6 games of the season. This is a kid. He's not a freshman, even though he's a first-year player. He went to 2 different junior colleges in Eugene before coming to Corvallis. So my question for Rocco is, how on earth can you imagine a kid at, like, Seattle CC deciding to roll a Pullman?
I can't. He's an incredible story. I got to watch Oregon State play both games last week. And they beat USC without Tinkle, which I know USC is a dumpster fire, but I was still impressed that they could pull that off in overtime without him. Stephen Thompson played incredible. Great story going in Oregon State, but you know where they go this week, and we'll find out what they're made of. They're making the trip of all trips down to Arizona.
Not just because they have a star freshman suspended, that doesn't mean USC is a tire fire, does it?
No, it's a tire fire for many, many reasons.
It's just more about what happens on the court versus off the court.
This may be one of the weeks where we actually could say we could circle a couple of Pac-12 games in the upcoming schedule. Those Oregon State, Arizona State, and Arizona games this week could be fun ones, believe it or not.
Yeah, they should be.
And Oregon, you know, everybody knows they lost Bol Bol, but they also got Luke King back. And I'm not sure if Wooten will be back this week, but he's coming soon. But I don't think they're as down as people want to say they are. I think that they obviously had that crazy collapse against UCLA, but they responded nicely by blowing USC out of the gym. So I don't think people can take Oregon lightly either. So I think that's all 4 of those games between the Oregons and Arizonas are going to be quality games this weekend.
Those may be the only games worth watching in this conference, though. I wouldn't worry about Washington picking up 2 more wins that will not help their profile one bit. But
well, Stanford's dangerous. Just ask Bobby Hurley.
Just look at those ratings though across the board. Washington is constantly inside the bubble except for BPI, because the bubble's right at 50 right now.
Well, the metrics were helped a lot this week with the 2 big road wins and actually playing good basketball. It's amazing what that will do for your numbers.
Let me pull this down here. Let me go through each of you for any other thoughts or any other comments about the evening or anything else you want to discuss. Joby, let me start off with you. Any other final thoughts for the evening?
Yeah, a conference we didn't discuss, but maybe more deep and better than the Pac-10 is the Southern.
Yes.
I mean, and this week, what's interesting about it is Furman's win over Villanova, and this is where it's referenced today. Furman's win over Villanova gives an anchor that is now helping every other team. Because then when Furman loses to a Wofford or a Wofford and an East Tennessee State and a UNC Greensboro, if those 4 teams –
all 3 of those teams are better than Wofford.
Yeah. If all those teams, and all of them, by the way, have net ratings like 69 or better. If all of them take care of business on the rest of the Southern, including a decent Samford team, as long as you continue to rise up and they only lose to each other and 2 pop out, one of them being Furman. And Furman has to because they had the Villanova win and thus the credibility outside the conference. You actually have a chance. You have a chance if one of those 2 teams wins the conference and the other conference tournament and the other goes to the championship game, I think you might actually be able to have an at-large mathematically get in because, A, the bubble is weaker than it normally is. The Pac-12 conference, which we just discussed, is a big part of that. But the resumes will actually line up and the metrics will line up. But a lot of things, there's ifs there. But because there's multiple wins to be had that can be quadrant 1 and 2 wins, you can actually have a decent-looking resume at the end of the day.
I pulled up those profiles. I mean, look at all those top 100 numbers in those top 4 teams. It's amazing that you're talking about a Southern Conference and not a Pac-12 or something when you're looking at that.
Right, and more on them on Wednesday
because we've
been big on them all year.
Stalika, you're up next.
Well, a couple final thoughts here. Number 1, Maryland did hold on against Wisconsin after blowing, I think, what was it, a 15 or 20-point lead in the first
21.
half.
21.
And ended up winning by 4. But the other final thought related to the Arizona-Stanford game, which I actually did see in the Bay Area. At times it did seem like it was Tucson North, but a rivalry that used to be pretty good in the late 90s, early 2000s, Arizona has now won 18 straight despite a career-high 29 points from KZ Ospala, who did lead the Cardinal to a win over Arizona State a couple nights later. I also highlight this game because apparently, according to Joby in the email thread, this was one of the bad beats because one of the Stanford's baskets came after the final buzzer. So,
yeah, it was a 3.5-point spread, and Arizona doesn't play defense as you should when you're up with 2 seconds to go, up five, and the Stanford goes down. They lay it in. Literally, the ball left the hand, and it was a good call. Left the hand a split second late as he was laying it in. 3.5-point win. Nope. 3-point win for Arizona. Nope. 5-point win, and I had Stanford at home.
On that note, so we discussed Arizona. Titel, let me swing it over to you.
So I'm going to take it out to the Midwest. I'm sorry I missed any earlier discussion of Marquette, but I get the privilege tomorrow night of seeing the Marcus Howard scoring experience as they come to visit the Hoyas. A junior point guard from Chandler, Arizona. He's been ridiculous this past 10 games, 33 points a game over the past 10. He's made 73s through his first 17 games, which is just over 4 a game. If he keeps up that pace through the 14 remaining regular season games, he should have around 125 entering Big East tourney play. If the Golden Eagles can make a deep run in March, which I would argue they can, not sure if they will, but they can, he has a legitimate shot of breaking Steph Curry's all-time record of 162 threes in a season. I don't know if he's going to score 50 against the Hoyas tomorrow night, but I can't wait to see it because I think he might.
Well, okay. We'll look for your update on that. And Rocco, over to you.
Yeah, so Chad, for those watching at home, sent us an early email earlier today and wanted to know a couple of teams that we thought would come out of nowhere and play themselves into NCAA tournament contention. So I, of course, took it to heart and went through every conference that we discussed tonight and wrote down 5 teams, but I found later that 2 of them were already really close to being tournament teams. That would be Florida and Syracuse. Syracuse now has the win they need, so not worth discussing. Florida, I think, is close enough. They can play themselves in. We already discussed South Florida. I think Georgetown is a team to continue to keep your eye on. They've got a lot of potential. I love watching Mac McClung. I know Titel's getting to see all this up close and personal. Very exciting team to watch. So I'll go with a sleeper team that probably a lot of people have written off. They started 0-3 in the Big East, and that will be Providence. They were on the back end of a game they blew 2 different times by not fouling on Saturday. But I do think Providence has the players and the coaching and the confidence to get back into the Big East race. And like Joby said at the beginning of the show, if they get up to a 10-8, 11-7 type record, they'll have enough wins to potentially warrant a bid. So I'll final answer say Providence.
I like that. Actually, there's another Big East team that I was looking at, and Stalico would like the fact that I was looking at it, but I think Xavier is a team that doesn't have that much bad in its profile so far. Going to have the opportunities coming off that nice win over Butler, kind of keeping half an eye on them also. But I think you're kind of right that the Big East may be the conference that team comes from, at least.
But I think you also have to watch the depth of a team like Xavier, because Quentin Gooden has been out the past couple games with a bad ankle, I think. He had actually tweaked it during warm-ups against Marquette, so that's why you saw guys like Najee Marshall and Paul Scruggs both playing 40 minutes against Georgetown and Butler. What's funny about Xavier, they were down double digits against Georgetown and Butler. They never panic, but yet they had double-digit leads against San Diego State and Seton Hall, and those are going to be 2 losses that I think are ultimately going to bite them in the ass this year.
We'll see. But David, let me let you finish things off here.
Yeah, another team that I think could make a run at the tournament to kind of piggyback off Rocco. They're kind of under the radar because they started off, I think, 1-3 or 1-4, but they've won 5 of their last 6. Their metrics are really climbing. They've got a lot of winnable games ahead that can really improve their profile. I think if they win their next 3 or 4, they can be right on the bubble, and that is this group right here. Let's get them up. Strength and conditioning coach Andy and Durant.
Oh God. I think on that note, this show has gone way too long, so we got to get out of here. On behalf of David Griggs, John Stalica, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Tytel, Joby Fortson, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.